Hey, this is Brandon Crawford from the San Francisco Giants, and you're listening to TortureCast.
You're listening to a podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. With hosts Willie Dills, Chad King, Ben Lee, and Eric Nathanson. Dedicated to the greatest team in Major League Baseball, the San Francisco Giants. This is TortureCast.
It's Monday, September 16th, 2019, and this is episode 180 of the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. I'm your host, Chad King, and what the hell? It was 100 degrees here in Gilroy 2 days ago, and now it's raining today. What's your weather like, Eric?
It's the 100 degrees. Bring me your rain.
Schizophrenic weather here. I don't know what's going on.
We're stuck in a very swampy pattern in the southeast, and from what I hear, we should be down to the upper 60s early in the morning, later in the week, and that's the best we get. Like, I haven't been below 72 degrees in 3 months, so.
Yeah. Oh, man. It'd be nice to go to Atlanta maybe this week. I don't know. We'll see.
No, it's going to be hot. It's so funny I'm sure the Giants will be coming into town thinking, oh, good, at least we're coming in September. It's not as humid. No, it stinks right now in the Southeast. Yeah. It really, really does. Thankfully, they're there over the weekend, so maybe that'll be, you know, a little lower of a temperature.
Well, the Giants did not have a fantastic week, but it was a mediocre week. They went 3-4 since we last recorded. They did lose 3-4 to Pittsburgh, which was unfortunate, but they did take 2-3 from Miami. So, I mean, Eric, look, you know, we talked about their one-run game, you know, record here. I have it a little further down in the notes. They're 3-0 in one-run games this week. That's all three wins they had this week. So that pushes their season record to 36-15 in one-run games. They've won 72. That's exactly half of their wins. They've won by one run. I mean, this team loves living on the edge, and thank God they've got that good record. I know we beat this into the ground the last few episodes, but it really is remarkable. But it also shows you, you know, this is not a team that is an overachiever. They are an overachiever in the sense of winning all these one-run games way better than anyone else's one-run game record. But the reality is they're really thriving on the bullpen being able to hold down. In fact, their bullpen has the best ERA in September, despite the fact that everybody's been complaining because, you know, they had that blown game, which we'll get to, against Pittsburgh and a couple other hiccups. But overall, their bullpen has been solid despite all of the trades and now despite all these freaking injuries that they're facing. Yeah. It's been kind of a tumultuous storm hitting the bullpen.
It's like an epidemic sweeping through. You know, Farhan totally remade the bullpen. And then his new remade bullpen, you know, Maranta, Watson, they're all just kind of, even Smith was out for a while. They're just all going by the wayside for some reason, which is okay in September when your team is 72-78.
Right.
I mean, you talk about overachieving. They're Pythagorean 67-83. So that's five more wins than they should have based on the runs scored and runs allowed, which surprises me. I actually thought it would have been worse because having half their games by one runs, I mean, I think that's the Bochy factor. I really do.
He manages the bullpen so well, no matter if it's a rookie, a submariner, or a veteran, he knows how to handle them.
Speaking of, he loves Tyler Rogers, it seems. Mm-hmm. He's going to him on an almost daily basis. Like, every day we're hearing Kipe go, Mr. Rogers makes his way down to the bullpen because he absolutely loves calling. I love that. Krug pointed it out the same night I did. It was so funny. We were watching the game, and he just loves saying Mr. Rogers. But that's the Bochy factor. And I think if we were looking at a team under different guidance, I don't think that they would be in the same position. I wouldn't be shocked if they were maybe 67-83 like the Pythagorean or even worse at this point. So yeah. It's a credit to Bochy. You know, I said it the other day on the Twitters that you can tell Zaidi and Bochy have been talking. And Bochy was on board with playing guys and sticking them out there and seeing what happens for Zaidi, because Bochy is somehow still invested in the future. And so his willingness to balance both things has made for an interesting September, because 2 weeks ago we were worried they were not going to win five games this month. Thankfully, they've gotten better at that. But, I mean, you know, it's still frustrating, you know, coming out of a week like this. You lose 3 or 4 to Pittsburgh, and then Pittsburgh goes to Chicago and gets absolutely demolished.
Crushed, yeah.
I mean, it wasn't – 13 runs is the fewest amount of runs they gave up in a game over the weekend. And it was like 17, 13, and 16. And it just never stopped, and the Giants couldn't do such a thing, which is, you know, why they did lose 3 or 4. But that leaves Bochy. We said he's at 72 wins. He's 2 wins away from 2,000 with only 12 games left. So there's no need to win 2 games a week anymore.
No, not at all. And it's funny, you know, the Giants only scored 17 runs in those last 7 games. They went 3-4. So that in itself is pretty remarkable, considering, like you just said, the Pirates didn't give up less than 13. And here the Giants score 17 in an entire week and still salvage 3 games out of 7.
I mean,
so.
Let's be fair. The Cubs have a lot more talent than the Giants do. Mm-hmm. But, like, when you see something like that, it's kind of like, you know, that used to be us, man.
It did. It's an unfortunate. The Giants are 72 and 78, like you just mentioned. They're 9.5 games back of the second wild card. But their elimination number now is down to 4. So most likely by our next podcast next week, the Giants will be officially eliminated from the postseason. And don't get us wrong, no one is thinking about postseason right now. But just giving you the numbers, that's all we're doing here.
Yeah, it's a way to play out the string.
Well, yeah, that's true.
I was going to touch on real quick. So Bochy's 2 wins shy of 2,000. They're going to Fenway and Atlanta this week. Bochy is career 1-7 at Fenway Park, so he's only managed 8 games there.
Oh, wow.
I'm sorry. He's 1-8 if you include the 1999 All-Star game, which the NL lost 4-1. And then they go to SunTrust, which has only been open for 2 years, so Bochy's only managed 7 games there. So these 2 stadiums he's going to, he's barely ever managed in, yet he could hit this milestone at one of them, which I just found kind of weird, you know? I mean, totally. He hasn't been, you know, he's only been to Fenway 3 times, once with San Diego, twice with the Giants, so... You know, it's just kind of strange that it won't be something that happens in, like, Dodger Stadium or Petco or, you know, Coors Field or Oracle or something like that. That he's going to end up, you know, with this one long-lasting memory is going to be against a team he's barely ever played.
Yeah, with 12 games left, I mean, you know, we're pretty confident the Giants are going to be able to go 2-10 in those 12 games. So I'm not too worried about that. But, yeah, that's a really good point. 6 games on the road in parks that he's barely managed in. He's probably, unless they, you know, obviously do worse than 2-4, gonna clinch it on the road. So, and that's fine. I mean, I want him to have the best managerial record he can get. You know, he's obviously gonna retire with a sub 500 record at this point. But you know, with the Giants, as of a few days ago, he was 500. I think he's still around 500 with the Giants. With the Padres, he was slightly under 500, so that gives him, you know, under 4 his career. But it's not about the managerial record. It's about the accomplishments you make. I see some, you know, Dodger lovers and maybe Giants haters on social media talking about stuff like that. Like, how can you give a guy, you know, a Hall of Fame nod when he has a sub 500 managerial record? And it's like, it's about what he accomplished. I mean, you could have some shitty years, don't get me wrong. But if you win 3 world championships in 5 years and you manage 25 years in the big leagues and are in the top 10 in games managed and wins, you deserve that.
I mean, he's gone 25 straight years managing in the National League without getting fired, and
that's incredible. Most
managers can't say that. Most managers are hired to be fired. And Bochy was originally hired to be fired like every other manager, but he did what he did. And like you said, he's got an exactly 500 record with the Giants, 1047 and 1047. But, you know, that kind of longevity, it speaks to something. And even in, like I was just talking about, even in lost seasons, managers like Bochy can stand out. And he has shown that over the last few weeks. And he's absolutely deserving of the Hall of Fame. Every guy that has more wins than him is in the Hall of Fame. Every guy with 3 World Series titles in the Hall of Fame. So it's a no-brainer. I think we've talked about this. 2022, I think, is the earliest he can go in. So that might be my first trip to Cooperstown, finally.
That's going to be fun. So this week, the Dodgers did clinch the West officially, but they didn't do it in San Francisco, which is great. Atlanta clinched a playoff berth. that's kind of where we are in the playoff situation. There's definitely a tight wild card race in the National League and a little bit in the American League, but most of the divisions are pretty much settled unless something crazy happens. But you know what? Look, the Dodgers, they've been not great lately. They've been kind of coming off a little bit down. I mean, they may not even get the number one seed in the National League if Atlanta catches them. And they're probably not going to get the number one seed in Major League Baseball, so they probably wouldn't be able to host the World Series should they make it that far. I just hope that the Dodgers this year are going to be eliminated earlier than the last couple of years, especially last year going down to Game 7. It's like, no. I just hope someone like the, you know, they're going to play the wild card winner, right? So right now it would be the Nats and the Cubs. So I just hope that either one of those teams, don't get me wrong, I know your wife is a Cubs fan, but I think the Nats match up better with the Dodgers.
Oh, they totally do.
So, you know, I'm hoping that the Nats win that wild card game, no matter who it is against. Could be the Brewers, you know, could be someone else. And, you know, just take down Kershaw and the Dodgers, and we won't have to worry about that too much into October.
Well, it feels like they're just not as strong this year. It's funny. They have 97 wins. They were the first team to, like, 50, 60, 70 wins. But they just don't feel like they have that same, like, strength that they used to have. Like, I didn't feel when the Giants played them last weekend, you know, every batter that came up to the plate, it wasn't, oh, man, this guy. Oh, man, this guy. There were spots where you felt like pitchers could get out, whereas the past couple of years, the Dodgers, it just feels like their lineup is just amazing top to bottom. So I think this is the year that they might, you know, fall short. Atlanta is playing really, really well, and we still don't know who's going to come out of the Central. Cubs are two games back of the Cardinals, and they still play each other 7 times.
Ooh, that is amazing. I love that baseball, you know, looks at the teams, and I think they definitely know, okay, can we forecast who's going to be the best in each division this year? We should have the top couple teams that we think are going to be the best battle each other near the end of the year. And sometimes this is how it works, because clearly the Cubs, Cardinals, and Brewers are at the top of the Central. So, you know, they said, okay, let's have the Cubs and the Cardinals battle it out at the end, just like, you know, the Giants and the Dodgers. They played last weekend. They play in the final series of the year. Granted, that's not going to mean anything now, but, you know, the Giants still could affect the Dodgers' ultimate seeding in the playoffs, which could be a good thing. But, yeah, I mean, you know, just not having the Dodgers go far in the playoffs is going to be nice. That said, last year they tied with the Rockies in the National League West, and they had to play the playoff game. They got in. Of course, they beat them, and then they ended up going to the World Series, and they were down to the last game of the season, Game 7 of the World Series, and they still couldn't do it. So it was fantastic.
And I was thinking, talking about this, there was a couple other baseball moments that happened this past week. Christian Yelich is out for the season. He fouled a ball off his kneecap. Apparently he doesn't need surgery. It's, I don't know, going to heal somehow. But if the Brewers were somehow to make the World Series, that's the earliest Yelich could come back. And I hope they don't. I'm tired of the Brewers. And that totally comes from a Cubs household. And Mike Trout's out for the season now. He's having surgery on his foot. And at first they were just going to try to keep him a DH and shut him down a little bit, but it looks like he's going to have foot surgery. So probably the two leading candidates for MVPs in each league just went down with injuries 2 weeks before the season ends. So it's kind of frustrating as fans because you want to see the great ones play, but I don't think it should affect any of the voting.
Probably won't. I mean, unfortunately, because of the Yelich injury, it's probably going to give the edge to Bellinger for the National League MVP. Trout could still win the AL MVP. Because his stats are so dominant, and it's only a couple of weeks. Yeah, I was reading a little bit more about his injury, and I guess it's not an injury that needed surgery right away, but because the Angels are not in the postseason picture, they just decided, okay, let's just get this done sooner rather than later. But he probably could have played through it a little bit. It's a nerve problem in his right foot where it feels like he's stepping on a pebble in his shoe the entire time because of calcification or some growth around a nerve ending down there. So that's what they're going to go in and kind of remove. So it's not like Tommy John surgery or anything like that. But I'm a little surprised that they shut him down. But at the same time, he's so valuable to the franchise. Why not get it done sooner rather than later?
And he probably had his best season ever, and they still went 68-82 so far. So, I mean, it's not good. It's It's funny because, you know, it's like a franchise icon. And shifting back to the Giants, I saw you noted here that the Giants rearranged their rotation. So the Bumgarner should line up to pitch that final game, that final Sunday, against the Dodgers. And it's a great nod that the Giants have done for Bochy and Bumgarner. And it was easy for them to rearrange the rotation. There's nobody going to be pitching on short rest or anything like that. Having today off and next Monday off really, really made it solid. So that means Bum will pitch in Boston on Thursday, and then he'll pitch next week on Tuesday against the Rockies, and then the final game of the season against LA. And here we were talking 2 months ago, oh my God, this could be Bumgarner's last start. And now we get to send Bochy out, you know, with his best and favorite pitcher. And I think it's really just lining up to be the way it's supposed to be.
Yeah, and hopefully they won't lose 15-0 like they did last year at the end of the season. I don't think that's going to happen with a bum starting. But let's talk about who came back for the Giants this year. Earlier this week, he had two starts, actually. But Johnny Cueto, coming off his Tommy John surgery, has just been stellar. Two starts, 5 innings each of shutout ball. Only 4 hits in those two starts, in those 10 innings. 3 walks and 6 Ks. I mean, and Bochy even said he looks stronger. And we've seen this before. We've seen this with certain pitchers who have had Tommy John surgery. And I'm not saying he's going to be stronger necessarily, because even if he shuts out the rest of the year, he has, you know, 3 more starts and he doesn't allow a run, I'm not going to anoint him the next Cy Young Award winner in 2020. But it does give a little bit of credence to the fact that some pitchers do very, very well after Tommy John surgery. And you know, this could bode well for the Giants going into next season, because it will, you know, he's obviously signed with the Giants. He'll be there next year. This could really improve their chances. They're 2-0 with him already.
Yeah, that's funny. They didn't get him a win yesterday. But you talk about it, it's translating in the numbers. Before his surgery, Cueto was sitting at about 89.5 miles an hour on his fastball. In his first start back, he was sitting about 91.5, and then on yesterday he was up to about 92. So he definitely is stronger than he was before. My favorite thing was I loved his first game back, that smile when he's walking off the mound. But yesterday was just really impressive. The first 4 innings, the leadoff batter got on every single inning for the Marlins. So Cueto had to pitch in traffic the whole game, something he didn't have to do on his first start, and he got through it just fine. Like, you know, yesterday he only struck out 2, but he walked 2, but he got like a ground ball double play at the right time. And then after throwing 28, 29 pitches in the fourth inning yesterday, being on a pitch count, he came out in the fifth inning, he threw 8 pitches to get out of the inning, and that was it, yeah. 7 pitches. It was like unbelievable. He was like, okay, this is all I've got. I mean, guys were getting hot in the bullpen as he's out there in the fifth inning, and it was just, I don't think it could have gone any better. I don't think Johnny Cueto's return could, short of throwing no-hit ball and back-to-back starts, I don't think it could have gotten any better. And I think he does give Giants fans a reason to look forward to next year, as if we lose Bumgarner, Johnny Cueto should be the number one in the rotation.
For sure. He had a pitch count of 70. So yesterday he threw 71, like you said. It was like 6, 7, or 8 pitches in that final inning after, you know, 31 in the previous inning, because he had to pitch through traffic. Next couple of starts, or next start, is going to be about 85, and they said his final start probably will be 100. So we'll see what happens there. The Giants, this is Farhan Zaidi. His fingerprints are all over this, but they fired 8 of their 20 scouts this past week. It's pretty amazing. Kruko was really upset on the KMBR show because he has a bond to a lot of these guys. But probably the most recognizable names for fans are Brian Johnson, of course, who hit that 1997 home run against the Dodgers, and Steve Balboni. He's a longtime Bay Area native, both whom served as pro scouts for the past 10 seasons and were relied on heavily during the 10, 12, and 14 postseasons. So, a couple of guys even worked for the Giants for more than 30 years. This is a sign of the times, Eric. And, you know, these guys are kind of old school scouts, and they have a lot of, you know, minutia to bring. But at the same time, Farhan is like, well, look at our farm system. It's kind of sucked the last few years. So we need to get guys who are a little bit more analytical, a little bit more in line with what I believe.
Well, from everything I've read, most of the scouts that he let go, like Brian Johnson and, oh God, you just said his name and I forgot it, the other guy, that Balboni. Yeah. Apparently, a lot of the scouts they let go of were advanced major league level scouts, meaning these guys were going ahead to whoever the Giants were playing next and watching those games. And Farhan wants to shift the scouting department to focus more on the lower minor league levels. Because, as he said, we have enough data, we have enough video, we have enough things to gather on the major league level that we don't have on the lower levels. You know, not every pitch is recorded. Not everything has video connected to it. Not everything has a StatCast number connected to it in the low minor leagues. So Zaidi wants to focus on the low minor leagues because that's where his gems have always been found. You know, that's in, and I'm not talking just gems in our system. That's for scouts to go look at other people's systems. And when they identify a player, they're going to try to get that player in trade. So like you said, it's a sign of the times with Zaidi, and he wants guys that are thinking more in line with him. And I totally understand him doing it. And I understand Kruko's upset, but this is another one of those moves that just shouldn't shock us under a new president.
No, not at all. All right, so Bochy says that Yastrzemski is going to play all three games in Boston this week. And it's kind of like, duh, why wouldn't you?
Yeah.
and there's some great quotes from Bochy. I don't have them in front of me, but it was something to the effect of, I know that Yastrzemski is obviously an icon in this town, and seeing an outfielder with that name emblazoned on his back while he's out in the outfield is going to do a lot of good for, you know, the brand and just really the enjoyment of the game. And I think his grandfather, according to Yaz himself, said he's going to attend at least one of those games.
Yeah, I think they're getting a suite. And I wouldn't be shocked, too, if Yaz gets a huge, our Yaz gets a huge ovation from the crowd just because of his grandfather. Yeah. You know, I mean, his grandfather was the only one to have a triple crown in 1967. And until Miguel Cabrera came along in like 12, I think it was, and had one. Nobody had a triple crown that entire time. So his lineage is fantastic. But Yaz almost didn't make it, diving in head first yesterday.
Yeah.
No kidding. He almost didn't make it to Boston.
Would have been decapitated there. I know.
Yeah, right.
All right, so let's talk about the weekend review. On Monday, they did lose 6-4 to Pittsburgh. The unfortunate part, and this could have flipped their week to having a winning record, they had a 4-2 lead going into the ninth. Tyler Rogers started the ninth and gave up a hit. So Bochy went to the pen and put in Abad, who gave up a hit and a walk to three batters. He got one out. And then Gustave couldn't hold it either, and he gave up another two hits. So, and part of that mix was a throwing error. Actually, it was a catching error by Mauricio Dubon and a sac fly at the end. And suddenly, four runs scored, and they were losing 6-4, and that was the final score. So it was an unfortunate game. It was one of those, like, didn't lose by one run, though.
No, it happened quick, too.
It did.
In that ninth inning. And it's a shame, because that was a Bumgarner start, where he really only made like one or two mistakes the entire time. And then like the bullpen that had been so lights out, couldn't hold it. Gustave, the man who had the save on Saturday, just couldn't hold it. But, you know, by that point, the snowball was already rolling downhill.
Yeah. So Tuesday, they won the only game in that four game series. They won 5-4. And this was Johnny Cueto's return. He pitched five scoreless innings, only giving up one hit and one walk, and struck out four. A vote went 2-for-4 with a home run and an RBI, and here is his home run.
I drive to right. It is out of here. Home run number 9 for Stephen Vogt.
And this is all with two outs.
And that was the bottom of the fifth, and that put the Giants up 5-0. So it became an uncomfortable game later, but the Giants ended up securing that victory. He had four RBI that game, by the way. He had a two-run single as well.
Was that the game that he also stole a base, or was that the week before?
No, that was the game he stole a base. Yeah, it was his first stolen base since like 2016 or something.
Yeah, it was like the Stephen Vogt game, and he came out of that game. I think Cueto is what pumped him up that game, because he said he had so much fun catching Cueto back there. And you know, I mean, who wouldn't have fun catching Cueto? You know, the shimmies, the pauses, the way his ball actually moves compared to, I mean, it just, It had to have been refreshing compared to some of the other pitchers that Vogt has caught this year. It was a quality win against the Pirates, but, you know, like you said, it was their only win in the week against them, and it was just kind of frustrating that was the only day that they could put it all together.
Yeah, so Wednesday, the next day, they lost 6-3. Logan Webb gave up 4 earned runs and 4 2/3 innings pitched. Thursday, they lost again, 4-2. Shark gave up all 4 runs in 6 1/3. Longo did have a 2-run home run, but that was the extent of their offense. So, I mean, it's one of those things where the Pirates are, you know, they have a worse record than the Giants. You figure you got to at least split with this team. You're at home. You should have a home field advantage. But as we know, Oracle has not been an advantage to the Giants. The Giants do better on the road than at home. And so they've already guaranteed, by the way, having a losing home record this year, which is definitely unusual for most major league teams. Not that, like, you know, the Orioles, of course, have a losing record and the Tigers and the Marlins. But, you know, if you're going to have an advantage, you're going to have a better record at home than on the road. And the Giants have it flipped. I don't know why. Yeah, I really don't know why.
It's possible. They're 33-42 at home. So, like you said, they are losing. It's possible that they end up with their worst home record ever.
Yeah.
Apparently, even like and they always reference 1985. Apparently, even the 1985 team was better at home than this team was.
Oh, that's bad. So,
yeah, that's, you know, whenever they're throwing 1985 in there, you know it's bad.
All right, so Friday they face the Marlins, and Tyler Beede, who is a little bit of schizophrenic, a little bit of bipolar going on, wins again 1-0. I mean, the Giants also won 1-0 against the Dodgers. He won 1-0 earlier this year in the game I attended. He went 6 1/3 scoreless innings. Posey delivered the only run of the game, and here it is.
Complete games this year, both games shutouts. He was named to the National League All-Star team. That is through, base hit. Vogt will score, 1-0 Giants.
When you're out there on the mound and you give up a ground ball like that off the crack of the bat, you're thinking, oh, we got that one. Then you turn back and you remember that, no, the infield's drawn in, and the drawn-in infield creates opportunity.
This is one of those hits that should not have been a hit, Eric.
I love baseball.
That's the thing. It's like in the books, it's a line drive, right? We always used to say that when I played, you know, a little Texas leaguer, a little bloop, a little duck snort, a little, you know, ground ball through the hole. It'd be like, it's a line drive in the books because, you know, half the time you're also going to hit a line drive at the shortstop or the third baseman and it's an out. So, like you said, I love baseball for this reason because it was just placed perfectly. And it was the only run of the game and they won. And again, it was a testament to the Giants bullpen locking it down after Beede left. But he's definitely Jekyll and Hyde, but he has potential. And I just hope he develops a little bit further here in the next year or two.
I give him credit. I truly believe that his performance, 3 hits, 5 strikeouts, and 6 1/3, and only one walk. I truly believe his performance on Friday is a result of Bochy leaving him in the game in the fifth inning against the Dodgers the week before.
Yeah.
When the bases were loaded. I personally think there's a correlation. People can talk me down and say, no, there's not. But there's something to be said for boosting that confidence. And I think that really translated because it was, like you said, you know, you were probably Beede's best or second best start of the season. And he had a track record, too, against Miami. He pitched a beautiful game in Miami earlier this season. So it seemed to be the perfect confluence of events for him. It's just a shame that the only run that came in was the tapper that got through.
So Saturday, Bumgarner allowed 2 runs in 6-plus innings. Left the game tied 2-2, but the pen could not hold it, and they lost 4-2. There really isn't too much to talk about there. And then, of course, yesterday, Johnny Cueto's second start since his return. He went another 5 shutout innings, left with a 1-0 lead, thanks to DeBond's 3rd home run of the year.
3 hits in the game yesterday as he shoots this one down the left field line. Hit well into the corner. Out of here. I'll say this about Dubon is he knows where to hit him. Down the lines.
Well, and he's made some friends in San Francisco since he's gotten here. home run number three for Devon. He gets a hanging breaking ball, and he knows exactly what to do with it.
Yeah, he didn't hit that ball particularly well, but it traveled out. So, but after that, the Marlins tied it after a bunt single with two outs. And I was, you know, listening to the game. I was running some errands, and Longoria came in. He read the play beautifully. It's one of those plays where if he didn't read it, it would have been a bunt single, and probably the Marlins wouldn't have scored. But he read it beautifully, charged the ball, barehanded it, and threw it a little bit wide. So Belt tried to get it. It, you know, his glove hit the runner. The ball goes down the right field line. Gerber was picking it up. He gets all the way to third. And then the next guy, of course, hits a single, and now it's tied 1-1. But in the bottom of the eighth, with the bases loaded and two outs, with a 1-1 count against Brandon Crawford and Mike Yastrzemski on third, this play happened.
In the dirt, here comes Yastrzemski to throw home, not in time, and the Giants take the lead. A gutsy play by Yastrzemski, but why not?
Oh, and he paid for it too. I mean, there was contact on his left shoulder when he came into the home plate. Hey, you just look for a little opening, good anticipation, then you're gonna see him break. A double pump because Stanek did not get down to the plate in time. And he never made the catch. And you see the whole body of Stanek fall on the top of Yastrzemski.
Yeah, that was, I'm watching this replay right now, and I mean, clearly if the pitcher had held on to that ball, Yaz would have been out.
Yep. But that goes to the old baseball axiom. Force the defense. You know, it's like putting the ball in play and make things happen. Force the defense to make a play. And Yaz took, I mean, that ball did not squirt far away at all. And he broke first step, so he wasn't delayed at all. And that's, you know, they forced the Marlins to make a play, and the Marlins couldn't do it. That was like baseball instinct 101 coming from Yaz. That was, I honestly thought it was really impressive. It was a good time to take the risk, I thought. I understand it's still a tie game. If the Giants were losing, you don't take that risk. But in a tie game, I think you absolutely do.
Oh, I agree. Tie game at home, you take that risk, especially with two outs. And the base is loaded. I mean, Crawford, you know, who's hitting just barely north of 200, he's probably not going to deliver a base hit. So you take your chances. And if he was thrown out, I don't think anyone would have been mad at him.
No, not at all. And then back to Devon's homer. We were talking about how Pilar hits homers, and I was pointing out how he yanks them. Devon's doing the same thing. He's finding that little area down the left field line and kind of yanking the ball. And I think that that might be good. He might be somebody who hits 10 to 15 home runs a year and surprises us. Because you can tell he's not fully developed. I mean, you just watch him in the box, the way he approaches it. Like that home run you showed, you saw his front foot was up before the pitcher even delivered the ball.
Yeah.
All his weight was back. And you could tell he kind of brought his weight forward a little bit, but he kept his hands back, which is what gave him the home run. So, you know, I think he's going to turn into that specialty of yanking it down the line, just like Kruko said. But, you know, to have Yaz's mad, it was like Yaz's mad dash to home. I love how you wrote dash to home, because that's how it felt. And, you know, to the difference between losing 2-3 to the Marlins and winning 2-3 to the Marlins, you can't. winning just makes you feel better. And, you know, the Giants, I could not imagine them going on a road trip after dropping that Sunday game to the Marlins thinking, oh, my God, we're so bad. And at least now they have some confidence.
3-4 is a lot better than 2-5, especially against two teams that are actually worse than you.
Yeah.
And at home. So, all right,
still
Eric,
should have been better.
Take care of who's hot.
Who's hot? A surprise at the top of the who's hot list this week.
I know.
Brandon Belt is 11 for his last 26, which is a .423 batting average. And right under him, the man who we weren't sure could come up with a base hit yesterday, Brandon Crawford, 7 for his last 21, which is .333. So for the first time, I think, all season, and the second to last week of the season, both Brandons have made the Hoops hot list. Only took them 6 months. Donovan Solano continues to his I don't want to say torrid, but it kind of is, because I feel like Donnie is squaring up the ball all the time. He's hitting .358 since the All-Star game. And he was part of He was part of one of the comebacks, I think. He got a base hit to get something going the other night. Johnny Cueto, as we've talked about, he came back and he's thrown 10 innings pitched, only given up 4 hits. His whip is under 1. It's at 0.7, which makes sense. Let's see. 4 hits, 3 walks. That makes sense. Yep. And a 129 batting average against, which I actually was surprised at. I thought it'd be lower than that, but then I remember there was those couple base hits to lead off innings. Cueto's not the only pitcher shining lately. Bumgarner, even though they lost both of his starts this past week, he threw 14 innings pitched, and he gave up 4 runs, which translates to a 2.57 earned run average. And again, he kept his whip under 1. He's averaging 0.86 runners per inning. So, I mean, he's doing his job. And then Tyler Rogers, who I mentioned earlier, has become a Bruce Bochy favorite. And I feel like he's pitched in every single game this week. And I think he has the kind of arm that can do that. Because he's putting less stress on his arm. You know, it's funny. I'll watch the game with my wife and she'll be like, doesn't that hurt? And I'll be like, actually, that feels more normal. Yeah. I hate being that guy, but it actually does feel more normal. So people who haven't played baseball a lot, it is not natural for us to throw a ball over our head and move. I'm totally moving my arm, but nobody can see it, and move our arm in that motion. So by coming up underneath, you know, it's less strain on the shoulder, which is why he can get away with throwing 79 miles an hour sometimes. So Mr. Tyler Rogers, he's so far this year, he's accumulated 11 and a third innings pitched and has a 1.59 ERA. He's only got a 0.62 whip, which is fantastic, because with a guy like that, you worry about walks more than hits, and he has not been giving up a lot of walks. You know, in fact, opponents only have a 1.28 batting average against him right now, and which is just phenomenal, and it totally explains why Bochy keeps going back to him. And then Gustave has been another highlight in the pen this second half of the season. He's just over 21 innings pitched. He has a 1.69 ERA, and again, his whip is under 1. 0.89. So the Giants are definitely starting to flesh out pitching for the future. So that's the who's hot.
Crazy. I mean, who would have thought at the beginning of this season, you know, we're talking about Tyler Rogers and Gustave and these guys we never even heard of, but they're performing very, very well since their call-up. All right, so who's not? Jalen Davis, 2-for-12, but he's got some pretty good speed, and obviously he hit 30-plus home runs in the minors this year. I just don't want him to be another Mac Williamson. We'll see what happens. There's only 12 games left, so it's kind of a small sample size. He's not going to get too many at-bats. You know, I don't know what's going to happen next year, what they're going to do. But Buster Posey, despite that one hit that I replayed there, he was only 3-for-17 this week. And then Yaz, who scored that run to win the game against the Marlins yesterday, is only 4-for-21. But I'm not too concerned about that itself. Talking about injuries, though, Reyes Morantes, we have several injuries, but this is the biggest one. He was put on the shelf at the end of August, and, well, he needs surgery to repair a little bit of some of the capsule of his labrum. It's not as serious as people might think it is. It's not. It's just something that takes a lot of time to rehab. So it's not anything that's structurally worried, but you know, it's going to be an issue. So he's not going to be able to pitch till at least August of next year. So we're talking about a whole year on the shelf of Maranta. And I know a lot of people make fun of him, but overall, his stats have been incredible. He just doesn't seem to do as well in high leverage, you know, situations. Giants definitely could have used him here in the last few games. That's for sure.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely was a key cog coming out of the bullpen. A 2.86 ERA in 56 and... excuse me, 2/3 innings pitched. Think about that, 70 strikeouts in those 56 and 2/3 innings pitched. So he's averaging more than a strikeout per inning, which is kind of what you want from a reliever like that. So I do think that he was in their long-term plans. So I would not – I expect Zaidi and whoever's in charge next year to give him a shot to come back to that bullpen, because he really has been. And talking about Zaidi, I'm going to rip through these transactions here. It wasn't as many because we're at the end of September. But Johnny Cueto, when he got activated from the 60-day injured list last week, the Giants designated Williams, Jerez for assignment. And a few days later, when the Pittsburgh Pirates left town, they took Williams, Jerez with them.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, buddy, you want to come with us? You want to ride?
It really was, right? I think right after that fourth game, too. So
I think as Grant Brisby said, well, they are the Pirates.
That's a great point. That's a good line. And then on the 14th, so what is that, 2 days ago, Saturday, they designated Corbin Joseph for assignment and selected the contract of shortstop Christian Adames from the River Cats and recalled Mike Gerber from the River Cats. And in response to so that was enough moves there. The Giants are, on their 40-man roster, I think about 36 guys are active right now. And then finally, they placed Tony Watson on the 60-day injured list, his left wrist fracture, after that tag play in St. Louis. And that caused them to select the contract of Enderson Franco from the River Cats, who I've never heard of, but I haven't heard of half these pitchers. Right? I don't know who the hell Birch Smith is. I didn't know who any of these guys were before the, you know, like we were talking about Peralta last. Like, where the hell did he come from?
All right.
Well,
so
the thing.
Go ahead.
Are you going to? Okay. I was going to say the thing with Franco is that when he makes an appearance in the game, like I talked about last week, he will be the 64th player to play for the Giants this year, tying an MLB record set by the 2014 Rangers.
Oh, wow. So Enderson Franco. You know, is a pitcher. He has a career. He does not have any major league games. So once he makes his appearance this, you know, coming week, I assume, it'll be his major league debut. He has a 4.57 career ERA in the minors, which started in 2010. So he's played 9 years.
Wow.
In, you know, minor league baseball. He's been in 183 games, so not a terrible amount. 889 and a third innings pitched, giving up just over 1,000 hits. So, you know, nothing just, you know, crazy to talk about. As far as Christian Adames, and I don't know how to pronounce that. Sorry if, you know.
I think it's Adames. Yeah, I think it's Adames.
Adames, okay.
Yeah.
He does have 307 career at-bats, mostly with Colorado, from 2014 through 2017. And, of course, this year he does have one at-bat with the Giants.
Yeah, I think he was their utility guy, the Rockies.
Career average is 205. And in those 307 at-bats, he only has two home runs, 20 RBI. So, again, these guys are not, you know, blaring off the map as a replacement for anyone else that people bitch about in terms of, like, Crawford or Belt or anyone else. But it's what they're doing right now. And they're just plugging in the holes. It's you know, a little bit of a dike action going and putting their fingers in the dike. So we'll see. You know, these guys I don't think are going to be proven, but they may have a little bit of a future with the Giants next year. We'll see.
Yeah, this is just Zaidi throwing a bunch of crap against the wall and seeing what sticks. And this goes back to me saying I'm glad Bochy's on board with it and kind of understands his role right now. He's not selfish. You know, I have a feeling before the season even started, Zaidi told him, look, we're probably not going to contend this year, and I'm going to throw a ton of players at you. And Bochy said, bring it. I'll find who I need to play.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that's kind of what's happening. So a guy like Franco, he's just getting his shot, you know. You said he's been a minor leaguer since 2010, and listening to those stats, it sounded like he was a starter for a while with the amount of innings he racked up. So, you know, it's possible that Zaidi's just, again, throwing something against the wall and seeing what sticks, which seems to be the MO. And so far, I haven't hated it. Got us Yastrzemski vote. I don't want to say Gerber because that guy strikes out all the time. But, you know, guys like that.
All right, so minor league report, the Sacramento River Cats are doing very, very well. They're headed to Memphis, a three-run eighth inning fueled by three consecutive walks and a clutch hit from shortstop Avelino, of course the Giants have seen this year, paved the way for a 7-5 victory and a sweep of the Round Rock Express to win the Pacific Coast League Championship. And this is this title is the franchise's fifth in its 20-year history. We're talking about Sacramento, not the Giants. And it's right. First since 2008. So they are going to Memphis, Tennessee, and that will be the setting for Tuesday night's AAA National Championship matchup between the River Cats and the Columbus Clippers. They are the AAA affiliate of the Cleveland Indians. It'll be the third appearance for Sacramento and the fourth for Columbus. Neither team has announced a starting pitcher for the game, but the first pitch is set for 5 p.m. tomorrow night. Watch the game live on FS1, Fox Sports 1, or listen to all of the action live online at rivercats.com. So this is unusual for the Giants to be at this position in terms of their AAA team. So it's kind of cool. It doesn't really mean anything, but hey, we'll
I mean,
take
they,
it.
they won their league, so that's the important thing. Yeah. And I think that's the first time a Giants affiliate has won the Pacific Coast League in like 40 years.
Oh, it's been 1978, I think, yeah, was the last time.
Yeah, there you go. So 41 years, and it was like a Phoenix team or something like that. It was
the Phoenix Firebirds. Yep.
That's the words, Firebirds, yeah. So, you know, I mean, that's it also shows that the Giants system has gotten better. You know, I mean, we talked about a couple weeks ago about all these different teams that made the playoffs this year. We were not talking about that in previous seasons. So, you know, it's cool. I had no idea the game was going to be on FS1, so good find there. I'm totally going to tune into that.
I know, it's pretty cool. All right, so before we wrap up, I wanted to talk about some of our viewers. Santa Ana Canyon, that's his handle. His name is Mike in real life, has been a religious viewer or listener on YouTube, which, you know, we don't get many views on YouTube. So that's his platform of choice. We get a lot more views on the podcast streams. But he said less than a week ago to our last podcast, "Thanks, Chad and Eric. Another really fun show. Your conversation about the impact players have on us when we are young and then as we age struck a nerve. Before my father-in-law passed away in July of 2012, there were many times when a whole bunch of us family members would sit around and just listen to him and his brother talk about going to Candlestick and watching the Giants. They talked of taking girls there on dates and that the fog rolled in around the eighth inning. They also talked about watching Mays and Perry and Cepeda, players none of us ever saw except in newsreels. They told of amazing plays and being gut punched as fans in 1962. Of course, that was the line drive that McCovey hit. You know, it's like, ugh, that would have been something. I'm starting to think of that admiring players is a never-ending cycle of memories and emotions that can be transferred if you're willing to let it. I feel the same way. Every time I listened to Chad and Eric, I felt the same happiness as they spoke of Clark, Bonds, and Baumgartner. TortureCast makes me laugh, cheer, go, aha, and sometimes get a lump in my throat. Good baseball talk is like that. Your show is loaded with great content, and it sounds so professionally well done. Sorry.
Thank you.
It's the best darn thing on all of YouTube. Again, another laugh. I love it. Thank you again. Always look forward to each episode, Mike. Mike, thank you so much for the kind words. We get a few comments like this here and there, and, you know, it's one of the reasons that we do this show, you know, mostly for us to talk about Giants baseball and kind of keep up the brand. But my God, I just love when people really, you know, express their opinions that we can connect with. And I know there's a lot of other people that listen to this episode. We get thousands of downloads every episode. I'm sure that, you know, these repeat customers aren't hating us. Otherwise, they wouldn't be listening to us. So I just really appreciate you, Mike, and others for listening to our show.
I do too. Those were some kind words, because when we fall back into talking about the past, you know, the way he described his father-in-law and brother was very much me listening to my father grow up and hearing stories of Cepeda and Mays, and I'm talking way back to Bobby Thompson and, you know, Leo DeRocher days too. So, you know, that's why I have a connection with the past. And I'm glad it comes through on the show, and I appreciate Mike's words. And it made me think of something. Listeners, we could use some iTunes reviews. If you go to iTunes and review our podcast in the next week, we will read them on air next week. We'll do an iTunes review show. Not the whole show, obviously, but, you know, if you go in, and we will definitely read, you know, if you hate us, you know, you're still downloading. So we'll definitely read your review. So go to iTunes, go into the review sections, because we could use a little boost there too. And we appreciate that we're connecting with people during a season which really the Giants aren't playing for anything. And I think that's what really strikes me more than anything. Is, you know, Chad and I talked at the beginning of the season that this was going to be a rough season, and we did not expect to be firing on all cylinders all season long. So, you know, it feels good that knowing that our work is paying off by putting out a show every week. So, you know, I appreciate, you know, Mike's words and all the listeners. So, like I said, listeners, go to iTunes, leave a review, and we'll share some of them on the show next week.
Awesome. All right, before we wrap up, you want to talk about this week in Giants history?
Yeah, I referenced 2012 a couple weeks ago in This Week in Giants History, and on Saturday, September 22nd, 2012, the Giants clinched the National League West with an 8-4 win over the San Diego Padres. I will always remember that night. I remember it was a Saturday. I remember I was watching on my computer in I guess, the office at the time and where I was living. It was a Bumgarner start. Brandon Belt hit a home run in the game, only his seventh of the year in 2012 at that point. And this is my favorite part. Every single one of the core four got into that game. Jeremy Affeldt pitched an inning, Casilla pitched an inning, Javi pitched a third of an inning, and Sergio closed it out with two-thirds of an inning.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and that was the last time any team other than the Los Angeles Dodgers won the NL West.
I know. 7-0.
But hey, at least it was us, right? You know, at least it was us. At least it wasn't like the Rockies or the Padres.
True that.
Yeah, so 2012 was a big year for me, so I'll always remember that. And you know, hopefully we can be talking about clinching divisions next year.
We'll see. All right, well, coming up, the Giants have three at Fenway Park and then three at Atlanta. So then they come home for the final six games of the year and their final homestand of the year. That's three against Colorado and three versus LA. I'm hoping to go to the Wednesday game against Colorado to meet up with a potential sponsor and have some fun and cover the game, but we'll see what happens there. You know, hey, look, 12 games left, not much is going to happen in terms of postseason play, but the Giants are going to play it out and, of course, hopefully get Bochy's two wins to get to 2,000. And, you know, I would love if the Giants could finish, you know, at 500. At this point, it's going to be very, very difficult to do because they only have 12 games left. They're five games under 500. But, you know, if they get close and maybe exceed preseason expectations, which were around, you know, 72, 71 wins, which they're pretty much already at, you know, that's good. That's good. But what else you got to pimp there, Eric?
Nothing. I'm really going to miss Giants baseball in 2 weeks. You know, I settled in to watch a game the other night, and the thought that, oh no, we only have 2 weeks left kind of hit me. And it's just, it's a shame because it has been a fun season, even though the team hasn't necessarily, you know, I shouldn't say competed. They haven't competed for a title. But right. They definitely have competed, you know, like this team's way better than I expected. So I'm sad. We only have 12 more games, you know, 150 in the books, 12 to go. And, you know, I look forward to the offseason, though, because we're going to have a lot to talk about this offseason. We're going to have a new manager. There's going to be a player turnover, probably a GM as well. So the Giants action is not going to stop once October starts. I'm pretty sure that we'll have Giants news going all the way through November.
Yeah, I would say that even though I'm very depressed that the Giants season is going to end here, we'll have one podcast next week, and that'll be right before the final homestand, and then episode 182 will be the season wrap-up, essentially, and a kind of a playoff preview. We'll talk about the teams that are in the playoffs, and we're going to record, you know, one or two podcasts during the playoffs, but when it goes into the hot stove season, it's going to be more episodic, you know, every 2 to 4 weeks, kind of like that. It depends on kind of the information that comes out, the news that comes out, and our schedules. Normally, it's not terribly exciting, but I think this year, like you just said, is going to be a lot of moves. We're not just talking about personnel in terms of players, but the manager and the coaches. And Zaidi, you know, is going to talk to Bruce Bochy, but there's a really good chance that, like, they fired 8 scouts. Zaidi is going to fire a lot of coaches.
Yeah, I think it'll happen.
And, you know, it's going to be a little bit of a cleaning house. It's going to be ripping off the Band-Aid. And I think there's going to be some hurt feelings and some social media and, you know, news worthiness there. But at the same time, this is kind of the rebirth, I would call it, of the San Francisco Giants. And I think it's going to be a good thing because the last 3 years have not been good. So I think everything's looking up, Eric, and, you know, if they don't compete in 2020, I do think 2021 is going to be a target for them to be definitely back in it. But then again, look, they were in it this year for quite a bit of time, so 2020 could really surprise us, especially if they re-sign Bumgarner and they have Cueto and some of these guys coming up for the minor leagues with a couple of free agent acquisitions, if they close off Triple's Alley and they get some players coming in. You know, it could be sooner than we think. So I'm really looking forward to this offseason. But in the meantime, we're dealing with the Giants of 2019. And it's, like you said, exceeded our expectations. We've had a lot of fun. And we've definitely recorded more podcasts, I think, than we've ever recorded in a season. And this includes our, you know, World Series
championship years, right?
Yeah, so it's pretty amazing. So anyway, thank you for listening, everyone. Like Eric said, give us some reviews on iTunes. Give us a thumbs up wherever you see us, wherever you get your podcast feed. We will be back for episode 181 next week. You can follow us collectively at TortureCast. You can like us on Facebook, where we post our podcast and, of course, articles and other things there. You can follow us individually at ChadK21 for myself, at 2OutHits for Eric. That's with the number 2. So until next week, we'll see you then. A-boom.
A big thank you to everybody for listening to the TortureCast, the podcast by and for fans of the San Francisco Giants. Follow us on Twitter at TortureCast. You can also like us on Facebook or check out our blog at torturecast.com. I also want to say thank you to Ashcon and Bailey for letting us use their song Feeling Like a Giant for our intro. For Ben Lee and Chad King, my name is Willie Dills saying we'll see you next time.